He knew by his nature how to play that. By his nature, he knew how to play that. He didn't have any challenges. He didn't work for that. He didn't practice for that. He didn't learn for that. He knew. Do we deserve any admiration or award for breathing? No. Because it's not in our hand. It's not our choice. So the rewards or the punishments are for the cases that you have a challenge. From one side, your anger, your lust. From the other side, your wisdom. There is a challenge. There are several dilemmas. You are hungry, but you decide not to eat. You are thirsty, you decide not to drink. You like to do something, but you decide not to do it. These are the challenges that make your reward or punishment. The issue of choosing, the matter of choice. Some people sometimes say that, why do we have such problems in this universe, in this world? The answer is simple. Because if there is no challenge, it would be meaningless for you to be rewarded or to be punished or to be elevated or to be downgraded. So the issue of free will is very, very critical in the destiny and felicity of human beings. Thank you very much. Have a good time. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلى الله على محمد صلى الله على النبي صلى الله على محمد وعلى آل النبي.
This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is such an honor to be here at your service, dear friends, dear listeners. In today's episode, we are talking about how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. If you allow, I would like to start with the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And because you are all quite familiar with the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, I don't find it necessary to talk about a lot of the details. But of course, as a general relating of what occurred, we find that many of the companions and the family members of Imam Hussein alayhi salam were martyred in the land of Karbala on the 10th of Muharram in the year 61 Hijri. Now, this martyrdom occurred at the hands of the forces of evil under the command of Umar ibn Sa'd, who was under the command of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, and of course who was under the command of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. May Allah curse every single one of them. Now, they had come to force Imam Hussein alayhi salam to pay allegiance, and this allegiance would mean that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was okay with the actions of these forces of evil. Now, a loss of a loved one, what a better place to learn how to deal with the loss of a loved one than this very story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who lost 72 individuals who were his beloveds, whether they were his companions or they were his own family members, including his brother and his nephew and his own sons. In such a short amount of time, to lose so many loved ones is truly tragic and is truly very painful. But we find that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was able to bear this loss with grace and with the help of the Almighty Allah.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, we're talking about how to deal with the loss of a loved one and the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Of course, in the previous segment, we talked about the story of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and how he lost 72 of his loved ones in a matter of a very short time. When it comes to dealing with the loss of a loved one, we have to first and foremost rely on the Almighty Allah. We have to continuously request and speak and beseech, supplicate and rely, communicate, talk, interact, have a relationship with the Almighty Allah. It is that speaking with the Almighty Allah, it is that relationship with the Almighty Allah that gives us a sense of comfort. It brings us security. It brings us tranquility when we are dealing with the loss of a loved one. Two, we have to realize that this world is temporary. Everybody, one day or the other, is going to pass away to the next life. And it is the next life which is the permanent abode. And inshallah, by the grace and the favor and the blessings and the mercy and the compassionate of the Almighty Allah, we too will join our loved ones in the next life. And it will be a life which is beautiful beyond imagination. And the last thing that we have to keep in mind is that this world for the believer is really a trap. It is a prison. It is a cage. And so the individual who has passed on, inshallah, has passed on to a better place. And this is another thing that we need to do before we close the program. And that is that we should try to send as many good deeds to those individuals, whether it is the reciting of the Holy Quran as a blessing and as a gift to that individual, reciting Salah, two rak'ah prayer, a two-unit prayer, Salah for that individual, or giving charity in the name of that individual, and to try to remember the positive aspects of that individual, and inshallah, you will be able to deal with the loss of a loved one in a very Islamic lifestyle. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah and God bless you all.
Won't be life tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
in the limelight.
The unemployment rate in the blockaded Gaza Strip, which has been described by human rights groups as an open-air prison, reached 45% at the end of 2022 due to the restrictions imposed by the Zionist regime. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote in this regard, "The fishermen's wives' seafood kitchen in central Gaza takes their husband's daily catch and turns it into a great meal. Instead of waiting for her fisherman husband to finish his day off the Gaza coast, Mona Hendir now works alongside him. He catches the fish while she creates and makes delicious dishes with them. Along with 19 other women, Hendir has opened the Fisherman's Wife Seafood Kitchen near the seaport of Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip. There, the women support their husbands, whose work in the fishing industry faces ever tighter restrictions from the Zionist regime." Hendir, 36, told Middle East Eye as she cleaned the fish, "They go fishing early in the morning, and once they are back, we take the catch and make different dishes based on customers' orders. We prepare the meals, wrap them, and then deliver them to different districts of the Gaza Strip. We complete our husbands and help them overcome the challenges." Hendir decided to support her husband after 14 years of marriage, during which she witnessed him come close to giving up fishing many times. She said, "He felt desperate and hopeless on many occasions, and he was about to give up on his profession. He and his fellow fishermen got chased by Israeli regime gunboats almost every day." She added, "The occupation forces opened fire towards them, threatened to detain them, confiscate their boats, and limit the fishing zone regularly. This has made fishing sometimes not worth the effort. There are many days when he would come back home after a long day of fishing without earning anything. But there were also days when he would make up for it." Before they started the project, the feelings of hopelessness that had overwhelmed Hendir's husband meant he thought it would fail. Hendir said, "All our husbands were doubtful. They told us that it was going to fail, especially as we started a similar project in 2021, and we gave up on it a few weeks later because we did not receive enough orders. But this time, we worked well on marketing and organized an opening ceremony with an open buffet to attract customers. We are getting many orders, and our husbands are now supporting the idea because they can see it is working." Although the majority of the 20 women working in the kitchen are wives of fishermen, there are also daughters looking to support their seagoing fathers. Growing up in a family deeply rooted in the fishing industry, Hanan Al-Aghra learned to make seafood recipes from a very young age. She told MEE, "I remember when I was a child, I used to come to the seaport where my father worked. I brought him food and tea and watched him fishing for hours. My grandfather was a fisherman. Now my father, uncles, and brothers are continuing the family tradition. I am very familiar with fish recipes and have decided to continue the same tradition and look for a new work opportunity through this project." The 29-year-old has a degree in English literature. Since her graduation, she has only done work connected to this degree for a couple of months. She said, "I once worked as an English language trainer, but I quit a few months later because the pay was really bad and the hours were really long. I'm still looking for job opportunities, but I currently work in the kitchen almost every day. We have a schedule organizing the working hours for the ladies, and each one of us works according to her schedule and assigned tasks. In the first half of 2023, there were around 4,900 registered fishermen working in the five governorates of the Gaza Strip. They're supporting at least 50,000 people. According to Nezar Ayash, head of Gaza's Fishermen's Union, the number of fishermen in the coastal enclave has increased over the past few years despite Zionist regime's restrictions on the industry. Ayash told MEE, "This year, we have the largest number of registered fishermen. The reason why the number is increasing while the Zionist regime's restrictions are tightening is that there are no other work opportunities in Gaza. People are depending mainly on fishing and farming. Since 2006, fishermen and farmers have been the workers most impacted by the Zionist regime's stranglehold on Gaza." Ayash said, "The first file that the occupation deals with when they decide on restrictions is the Gaza Sea. They immediately limit the fishing zone from 12 to 6, or 3 nautical miles. In addition to this, there are daily incidents of detention, boat confiscation, and assaults by the Zionist regime. Under the 1993 Oslo Accords agreed between the Zionist regime and the Palestinian Liberation Organization, PLO, the Zionist regime is obligated to permit fishing up to 20 nautical miles off the Gaza coast. In practice, this has never been implemented, with Israeli regime gunboats usually appearing between 6 and 12 nautical miles offshore. At times, Gaza's fishermen have been restricted to join 3 nautical miles by the Israeli Navy." Ayash said, "While they confiscate fishing boats and equipment, the Israeli occupation has also been preventing the entry of any equipment necessary for the fishing industry into Gaza for the past 16 years. He added, "This includes fiberglass, which is needed for manufacturing and repairing fishing boats and boat engines. Today, when an engine is broken, fishermen repair it by replacing parts from other broken engines. If an engine part is available on the black market, it would not be a genuine part, and if its original price is 100 shekels, it actually costs them around 1,000 shekels." On a plastic chair outside the kitchen, Hanan's uncle Adnan Al-Aghra was taking a day off from fishing. Having worked as a fisherman for over 50 years, Adnan says he feels that he was born in the sea. He says, "I have worked with my father in fishing since I was around 10 years old. I helped him as a child and now my children help me. We first used the fishing net, which we could only use while standing on the beach. In 1984, we brought our first boat, and then over the years, we bought another 2 boats that I, my brothers, and our children have used for decades. But in 2021, one of the family's boats was shot at by an Israeli regime gunboat as Al-Aghra and his brothers were fishing within the permitted fishing zone. The shot left a hole in the boat, but we managed to repair it soon after the incident. They still regularly open fire towards our boats to force us to back off, although we sail within the allowed limit. But we still go every day because what would we do otherwise?" According to fishermen and their wives, the kitchen project, which they started in order to challenge the Zionist regime's restrictions, will still be significantly impacted by the Zionist regime's blockade.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Allah my Lord. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners, sisters, and brothers from all around the world. This is You Station again.
Yes, IRIB English Radio.
I am Bita.
I am Asma.
Here again.
Yes, really, home sweet home.
Exactly. I'm really happy to be here again.
Youth Station.
And I don't know, it has a really special vibe for me.
Exactly. Same in here, of course. Yeah. It's Youth Station. I mean, how not to have a special vibe?
Exactly. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great.
Come on, it's really unusual of you to tell me that you're doing great.
I'm being so ironical.
I'm doing well too. Not great, not bad, but you know.
So.
These days I was a bit sad because I lost someone in my family that was really
so
precious. Yeah. And, you know, I want to tell you the story of this man and his family.
So eager to listen to your story.
Thank you. You know, actually, my mother has an aunt, and this aunt actually was unable to move because of a genetical disorder
for
40 years. Exactly 1 year after her wedding, she got this disease. And after that, she was unable to move. Her husband stayed for her all these 40 years, all of these moments. And, you know, we were sometimes going to their home, and he was always there for her.
Was their marriage based on love?
Nope. It was actually a traditional marriage. And
wow.
This is, you know, they have a lot of problems. Like the family of the husband of my mother's aunt always just forcing him, you have to get divorced. You have to get a new woman, a new life. You have to start. You're wasting your time, you know.
The same thing that happens to everybody in this
world. But, you know, it was a big wonder for me that all of these things had nothing to do with him and what he was doing with his life. And unfortunately, about 3 days ago, he passed away. And
she's still alive.
Yeah, and her wife is alive. In his funeral, all the people were like, he was an angel.
This sacrifice
is not an usual death.
There are different forms of martyrdom. There are different people we could call as martyr. And it's not just a person who gets a bullet in their head in a battlefield. Not only those people are going to be called as martyr. By the way, not all those who get killed in a battlefield are called martyr.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everything depends on your intentions. And so as just we were talking about your story, I could say that not all people have this blessing inside themselves to have the intention to help other people truly and with their full heart.
You know, but I think sometimes the matter of sacrifice is actually being exposed here. One of the biggest intention is love, as you told. This is a blessing. You know?
So according to you, when somebody dies out of love, when somebody dies because of love, then that could be called martyr.
It depends. Love for what? You know, sometimes you love doing bad things. You love committing sins. It doesn't mean that you are martyr.
So for a great cause.
And,
You love something that is so great and Allah himself loves the thing that you love.
Exactly.
So it's going to be called martyr.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah.
And sometimes even the death itself is not martyrdom. I mean, the process of your living is a form of martyrdom.
Exactly.
You know, but sometimes you are so patient, I don't know, with someone who you are living with. And this patience is itself, in itself, is a form of martyrdom.
A form of martyrdom.
Or, I don't know, some scientists who are searching, who are just sacrificing their time, their age, their days that they can, I don't know, go for fun.
Yeah.
They are committing their time for doing something for human beings.
Well, since we are in the holy month of Muharram, There is something I would like to share, yeah. But just before that, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back.
Stay tuned, dear listeners. Starting from the story up to here that we get to the point that we are in the month of Muharram,
yeah.
You wanted to tell me something. And by the way, this is your station.
Yeah. Well, ever since I was a child and we got to this month, just as I started thinking about the message that Imam Hussein alayhi salam wanted to tell us,
yeah.
I was just wondering, well, what if we were there? You know, I always had this wish that, okay, I'm a woman, but I could have been there and shared them some sort of, you know, had a part in the kind of grief they had. What if I was a part of the people who fought for him, fought in his front, of course.
Yeah.
And then I always had this wish, and I guess every Muslim person who does believe in Imam Hussein alayhi salam and in his messages, he or she would love to be there, to had been a part of that story.
And even you can see this love in non-Muslim people, you know, they have passion for Imam Hussein in this period.
And just as I was thinking about that, that what if I was there? What if I could have been a part of that story? What if I could have gone through martyrdom like that? And then as I just started to read more and listen to more of great people's word, then I understood that it's true that we were not there. But still, if we go through the same path of life as Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and as the way he wanted us to live and to behave with other people and to interact in a Muslim society, so we still could be called as martyrs.
Yeah.
If we have the same belief, if we have the same creed, because everything depends on your intention.
Exactly.
When you have the intention of, okay, I wish I could be a martyr, I wish I could die for a greater cause, I wish I could die and then get into the arms of Allah directly, just because I have sacrificed my dearest thing, that is my soul, for Him. Just because of these wishes that I have inside my head, I guess, since they are the intentions that are pretty much heavenly, just by having those intentions, I guess you could still die and be called a martyr in God's eyes.
I do agree with that. You know, I always think of that too. I wanted to be there, but sometimes this thought is a bit scary for me, because I think like maybe I didn't have the potential to be at that time. And if I was there, I couldn't be that help to Imam Hussein and so on. And I
because not all people have the courage and this much of, you know, you must be very much clear in your heart with yourself.
And you have to be so strong, you know, to stay in front of everyone at that time and tell other people strongly that this is the truth, this is the belief I believe in.
Yeah.
You know what? But I think having only the intention of and the love and the passion for being martyred is a kind of form of martyrdom, even you die.
So as we already talked about it, there are different forms of martyrs in this world.
Yeah.
There are different sort of death that we would call as the martyrdom. So one of them is to live in an innocent way and to die, though you have the belief and creed that Allah wants you to have.
Yeah. And another thing I want to mention, which I think is lost here in this episode, is about the COVID-19 pandemic, that we have all those doctors and nurses.
Okay, guys, she's a doctor.
No, I wanted to mention that because I think it is valuable.
Yeah, of course.
Sacrificing your life for other people.
For other people, yes.
Is really big. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you can see all the people in this for their committing scenes. They are prioritizing themselves. They for putting themselves in the first place.
They are the center of everything.
Exactly. And when you change it, it's a revolution. Exactly.
When you put others in front of yourself and then you sacrifice yourself for them, I guess this is being martyred.
Yeah.
And also there's another form of martyrdom and another person that we could call martyr. You know, I love this thing that we always get this description about Allah, that he has the power to just punish me, but he doesn't because he's so patient with me.
Yeah.
He has the power, yet he prefers to be patient with me. He gives me more of opportunities. Now, imagine this. God is watching over a young person who has the power to go for sins, but he or she does not go for it.
Yeah.
So this person also is going to be called a martyr because...
For sure.
As the time of youth, since we're talking to the youth, when we're young, we have too much of passions for everything.
And the tendency to do everything, exactly. to experience everything, and commit sins.
Exactly. So see, when you're young, it's just like you are... you're having this much of passion in yourself and you would love to go for every single thing, to taste them, to try everything.
And, you know, you think like you have a lot of time, you know.
So those young people who have the power, who have all the things, all the facilities for themselves to go for the sins,
but
the different sort of sins, but they don't, they also are going to be called as martyrs.
For sure. You know, I think this is one of the highest stage of these forms of martyrdom. I think we have to go for a break.
Yes, that's very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Talking about martyrdom.
So we were talking about different forms of martyrdom. And I guess we talked about each and every single form of them. But still, there are so many
other things to tell. Like motherhood, which we forgot to talk about. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to go through that. But only a little hint. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mothers are big martyrs.
A mother who's about to give birth to a child, but then she would die and lose herself the process of getting to be a mother. Yeah. Then she's also a martyr.
Yeah, she's the real martyr, actually, because all of her sins would be forgiven.
A father who goes through too much of drudgeries to bring a halal food for their children is going to be called a martyr if he dies.
And, you know, at the end, I want to tell you that we're all going to die. You know, death is something which you have in your fate. Mm-hmm. There is no way to run away from it.
You see too many annoying people. They break your heart. You have too much in your plate already, but you have to tolerate other people's, you know, nagging, other people's strategies to get into your skin or to hurt you, to bother you, to do you terrible stuff. Still, you have to be this kind person who is so hopeful about the future.
And patience,
who practices patience. Yeah. And
everybody has its own limitations. You know?
Exactly.
You may get to your limits, and but this is not the end.
This is actually my point of view. Yeah. I suppose that if you believe in Allah and in the people whom He has trusted the most and asked us to trust them as well, and then practice their lifestyles, these infallible people's lifestyles, then be the kind person that Allah wants you to be, the true, honest person. Then when you die, even if you have never been into a battlefield, even if you have never gone through too much of terribles of the war, of course.
Yeah, I get it.
Still, you're going to be called a martyr.
So let me have my own point of view and then go for the end of the episode. So, you know, I think all the things are about our intention.
Mm-hmm.
Your intention is really important. It doesn't matter that sometimes you are sad, you are at the end point of, I don't know, everything, and you are depressed.
At the end of the road.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to end. you know.
Yeah.
And you have to go for a new beginning. You have to go for something new and have the same intention as you have, as you want to have to be a good person all the stages of your life.
Exactly.
Sometimes you may not be able to practice it, but still you can have the intention.
And
you know?
Something, you know, there are too many martyrs who are obscure. Nobody knows them. They yeah. die in silence. Nobody gets to know them.
God knows
the people. Yeah, exactly. Except the people who are so close to them, yeah. like the father that is doing too much of hard work for his family, like the mother who dies for giving birth to her child.
Exactly.
Unknown to us, but known to God.
Exactly. And I think this is the end of yeah. this beautiful episode. Thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. It was all the time we had. And I wish you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
In the limelight.
On July 18th, U.S. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib issued a joint statement with fellow Congresswoman Cori Bush, declaring they would boycott the visit the Zionist regime president Isaac Herzog to Washington. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, the statement read, "Bestowing President Herzog with the rare honor of a joint address to Congress, while the Israeli apartheid government continues to enable and directly support racism and brutal settler attacks, is a slap in the face to victims, survivors, and their loved ones, including the families of Americans murdered by this regime, like Shirin Abu Akleh and Omar Asad." Many human rights groups, anti-war activists, and other so-called progressives hate this statement, especially considering the popular support the Zionist regime has in U.S. Congress and the absolute grip of the Zionist lobby. Meanwhile, the run-of-the-mill Democrats and conservatives condemn the boycott using their typical smears, falsely claiming the boycott is anti-Semitic. It's contradictory to claim to support human rights when you are arming the oppressors with billions of dollars of bullets and bombs, noted the statement by Tlaib and Bush. The choice of words was extremely interesting, especially considering Tlaib's tweet in a few days later. The Zionist regime, who Tlaib and Omar boycotted, has been illegally bombing Syria for years, sometimes multiple times per week, killing innocent Syrians. Not to mention the West, spearheaded by the US, has been at war with the Arab country via direct confrontation and its proxies for over 10 years. The United States has invested billions of dollars into destabilizing Syria, which has caused a humanitarian crisis impacting millions of people in the country, starving Syria through horrific sanctions, destroying its cities, or funding Al-Qaeda-backed extremists to execute pro-Damascus supporters. The new resolution comes the same year. Syria suffered a horrific earthquake, killing thousands, and millions could not receive aid because of the previous sanctions. Tlaib, Omar, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and other progressives overwhelmingly supported. The new resolutions will open a path to more sanctions where civilians will suffer, exacerbating a humanitarian crisis that the West has aided and abetted. Boycotting the Israeli regime is morally right, but these so-called progressives cannot condone their own government's foreign policy that revolves around invasions and sanctions, which the likes of Tlaib, Omar, and Ocasio-Cortez actively have the power to make a difference. The fact is, you cannot serve in the halls of U.S. Congress, at least as a Democrat or Republican, without serving imperialism. That is because the very nature of progressivism has shifted in the United States. Attributes of the progressive movement for decades were demands for fair criminal justice, anti-police brutality, healthcare benefits, and of course, demands to stop a war. Now, however, with an emerging generation that does not want to participate in the previous generation's wars, a shift has been made to appeal to the new generation of Americans. War itself is being sold as progressive in order for Americans to buy it. The Squad, a group of so-called progressive Congress members, which includes Tlaib, Ocasio-Cortez, Jamal Bowman, and more, sells wars masterfully, rallying their voter base with ideas of taxing the rich and social rights. These members of Congress work in unison with the war hawks in Congress to pass bill after bill meant to support the United States military interest. It's no wonder why U.S. President Joe Biden has been able to pass a series of multi-billion dollar packages for weapons shipments to Ukraine. It has become progressive. The neo-Nazis that flood the military ranks of the Kiev regime are now painted as defenders of freedom, democracy, and European interests. In order for the U.S. to continue to wage its unpopular wars and invasions, it needs a voter base that is convinced that what the Pentagon is doing is right. Washington has recognized that the new generation, from later millennials to the young generation Z, cannot be so easily pulled into wars as the previous generations. To continue its criminal missions across the globe, Washington will need to turn these wars progressive. They will need to become fighters for human rights, for liberal democracy. And all it takes is an analysis of the framing of the war 20 years ago versus today. In 2003, then-U.S. President George Bush told Americans that America needed to fight to defend itself from those who want to take away its democracy. In 2023, Joe Biden is fueling destabilization efforts in the same regions under the guise of bringing democracy. Progressive-minded people need to be convinced that human rights and social justice are being exported, albeit via the barrel of a gun. The new generation must wake up to this. They must see through the deception of progressives in Congress who are just the cold warriors of today. If they don't, they will risk being pulled into another military quagmire, just like previous generations, or be tricked into supporting the U.S. proxy efforts. Perhaps a good first step forward would be to question why even the most so-called progressive members of U.S. Congress want to serve the war machine.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Who is Imam Hussein? Why did he launch an uprising? The Prophet saves humans, so in the Quran, one important purpose of prophethood is said to be establishing justice. We sent our messengers with clear evidence to support their truthfulness. And send them the book and the balance so that people would maintain justice. The Holy Quran, chapter 57, verse 25. In fact, the divine books and the prophet were sent in order for justice to be established in societies. That is to remove the symbols of oppression, coercion, and corruption. The movement of Imam Hussein was a movement of such nature. He said, I rose up to reform the Muslim community of my grandfather, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. He also said, whoever observes a ruler legalize what God has made unlawful, violating the covenant of God, opposing the sunnah of the messenger of God, and treating the sentries of God sinfully and oppressively, he who does not oppose him with his speech and action, God has a right to bring him to the same fate as that of the tyrant. Bihar al-Anwar, volume 44, page 381. That is, if a person sees where corruption and oppression emerge from, yet they do not do anything to oppose the source of the corruption and oppression. For God the Exalted, they have the same fate as the corrupt oppressor. He said that he did not rise up for the cause of wickedness, amusement, corruption, or oppression.
Ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana mazlum Hussein, ana latshan.
Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, made the army of reason overcome the army of ignorance.
The people of Iraq invited Imam Hussein to rule over them, and Imam Hussein answered their request. So, it is not that Imam Hussein did not think of creating a government. He was indeed thinking of the overturning tyrannical powers, either by taking the government away from them or by martyrdom. Imam Hussein knew what would his silence, his endorsement, and his indifference would do to Islam if he did not take any action. When a power takes all the capacities of a community or some communities under control and acts tyrannically, if the man of the truth do not oppose him, refuting his actions, they have actually endorsed his actions. That is, oppression is endorsed by the man of truth without them really wanting it. This was a sin committed by the elite from among the Bani Hashim and the children of prominent figures of the early years of Islam. Imam Hussein, however, would not tolerate it, and hence he rose up.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Thousands of people marched and rallied in Seoul Saturday to mark the 70th anniversary of the signing of the Korean War Armistice. They demand a peace treaty with North Korea and view critically the strong ties with the U.S. developing under South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol.
The United States is intervening in our political, diplomatic, military, and economy to maintain and strengthen its hegemony. As a result, the sovereignty of South Korea is being trampled and the national interest is being abandoned.
Previous South Korean President Moon Jae-in had engaged with North Korea and sought to replace the armistice with a peace treaty, but that failed to materialize with the U.S. refusal to respond to Pyongyang's freezing of its nuclear and missile testing.
Relations between North Korea and South Korea and the international community have deteriorated under President Yoon, who's initiated large-scale joint U.S.-South Korea military exercises. The U.S. has also deployed so-called strategic assets to South Korea, weapons capable of delivering a nuclear strike against North Korea, further raising tensions here.
South Koreans here have also been sensitive about the developing trilateral alliance with the U.S. and Japan.
Alliances involve solidarity and equal relationships, not subordination. President Yoon's administration has been increasingly influenced by Japan as well as the United States. The strengthening of the military alliance is very dangerous.
The official armistice anniversary is July 27th. Through this week, various events, including in Washington, D.C., will address replacing the armistice with a peace treaty and seeking better ties with Pyongyang. Frank Smith, Seoul.
After a call by Hezbollah chief Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, Lebanese worshippers took to the streets after noon prayers on Friday to protest the desecration of the Holy Quran.
I demand for the government of the Lebanon to expel the embassy of Sweden embassy for our dignity and prosperity.
Our protest is to defend and secure our Holy Quran and all the holies, starting from hijab, prayers and adhan, and all the holy sites, including the cause and the only cause of all Arab and Muslims, which are the cause. At Syria and the Quran.
We want to defend our Quran and we don't want anyone to violate our holy book.
In a speech on Thursday, the Secretary General of Hezbollah said Hassan Nasrallah denounced the Swedish government for allowing such sacrilegious acts to take place on its territory and stressed that all Arab and Muslim states need to follow in the footsteps of Iraq and expel the Swedish ambassadors.
If all the Arab and Muslim countries withdrew their ambassadors from Sweden and asked the Swedish ambassadors in our countries to leave, then what would happen to Sweden and its government and its interests? Boycotting products is a good step, but it's not enough to teach them a lesson. When they see that their interests are at stake, and the Arab and Muslim countries are not too weak to take this step, then they would be forced to resolve this issue.
Nasrallah also called on the Lebanese government to adopt a firm stance against Sweden and asked the worshippers and mourners attending Muharram processions to commemorate the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein to always carry a copy of the Quran to show the world that they are ready to sacrifice their lives for the sake of protecting the holy book.
Today we have gathered to fulfill the call by His Eminence the Secretary General Syed Hassan Nasrallah, who is the great-grandson of Prophet Muhammad, to whom God sent the Quran. We tell Sweden and the entire world that our Quran is Al-Quds. It is our dignity, and we will defend the Quran with all our power until they learn to respect it.
It is our duty to preserve God's religion and the messages He has sent us. To denounce the violation of the Quran, we came here today to say that this is our constitution. And we call on everyone, be they Christian, Druze, Sunni, Shiite, no matter what their sect or their Arab or Muslim nationality, to stand with us.
Several Muslim countries have already summoned Sweden's ambassadors or its charge d'affaires to protest the second incident of state-authorized desecration of the Holy Quran in the Swedish capital.
Lebanese protesters have stressed that the Holy Quran is not only a divine book which introduces Islamic teachings, it is also a book which represents humane values for all mankind. People here today say they are steadfast in defending the Holy Quran against any sacrilegious act. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
Afghan female school graduates are shedding tears of dismay after their exclusion by the Taliban rulers from the university entrance exam, also known as Concur. They have been studying hard for the national test in order to pursue higher education. But all that has been in vain, as the Taliban have announced that only male students can sit for the exam this year.
I wanted to pursue my higher education and become a leader and serve my people. But now they say that girls cannot take the university entrance exam. This is unfair and unjust. I am so sad and feel like my life is over.
I wanted to enroll in medical university and become a professional doctor and help my country prosper. But unfortunately, the Taliban shut the doors on our dreams and future and denied us our rights.
In a new report, UN human rights experts say the Taliban authorities have increased restrictions on women and girls in Afghanistan in recent months. The UN has urged the Taliban to respect and protect the rights of all Afghans, especially women and girls, and to ensure their access to education, healthcare, and other essential services.
With all these restrictions on women in place, Afghanistan's future is looking increasingly bleak. Girls and women are losing hope as they are being excluded from all political, social, and educational spheres.
The Taliban have not given any clear indication of when or if girls will be able to resume their studies at high schools or universities. They say they are upholding women's rights in accordance with their interpretation of Sharia law and Afghan culture. No other Muslim country in the world imposes such restrictions on women's education. The fate of Afghan girls remains uncertain as they are being barred from most educational settings. For many of them, education not only is a source of knowledge, but also a source of hope and empowerment. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iranians from all walks of life once again out on the streets, chanting slogans and using the strongest terms to express their anger.
Protesters rallied in the Iranian capital, Tehran, after the Friday prayers, along with a number of other major cities across the country, to condemn the desecration of the Holy Quran.
The protesters also called on the foreign ministry to cut ties with Sweden. This is the second time in less than a month that an Iraqi refugee